This is The Session, a weekly preview of the policy clashing its way through the 67th session of the Montana Legislature. I'm Shaylee Rager. I cover the State House for Montana Public Radio.
I'm Kayla DeRoche. I cover energy for Yellowstone Public Radio.
And I'm Eric Dietrich. I cover the State House for Montana Free Press.
It's week 16 of the session. 1,297 bills have been introduced. At least 197 have been signed into law. This week, we're watching a mounting dispute over separation of powers and debate on a bill that would incentivize the state's largest utility to buy more power from Colstrip. So, Eric, the biggest story last week that is likely to see major developments this week is about a conflict between the legislative and judicial branches.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. This whole thing started with a new law, Senate Bill 140, which gives the governor more power to appoint judges to fill vacancies.
Judges in Montana are elected in nonpartisan races, but the appointments come in when there's a vacancy that needs to be filled outside of election cycles. The new law has the governor make direct picks there instead of choosing from finalists forwarded by the Judicial Nominating Commission.
That bill was signed into law last month and saw a near immediate challenge from people who thought it was an important check on the governor's power. So now it's before the Montana Supreme Court. Fast forward a month, though, and now we're at a point where the legislature has subpoenaed all seven state Supreme Court justices and demanded that the court administrator turn over computers for inspection.
Right. So backing up a little bit to just kind of talk us through how this has all played out, Chief Justice Mike McGrath recused himself from hearing the case right from the beginning because he had told the governor that he opposes the new law when it was still pending legislation. The Supreme Court then appointed a lower court judge, Kurt Krueger, to fill in.
Yeah, but then the Office of Attorney General Austin Knudsen, which is representing the governor's office and now the legislature in defending the law, they got their hands on some internal emails where there's an internal poll where the court administrator, Beth McLaughlin, had emailed judges asking them to weigh in on what they thought on Senate Bill 140. That poll on the bill, Senate Bill 140, was conducted on behalf of the Montana Judges Association, which lobbies for the judicial branch. And it turns out that Krueger had responded, saying he was adamantly opposed to the bill. The attorney general's office then pointed that as evidence the judge had already made up his mind on it and wasn't fit to hear the case. When that came out, Krueger then recused himself.
Then legislative Republicans demanded that McLaughlin turn over pretty much all of the emails she sent from her state account since the beginning of the legislative session. They issued a legislative subpoena asking for this information. And they say they're worried that these polls show that judges are prejudging bills moving through the legislature, like this new law that allows the governor to appoint to some vacancies directly. And some of these other bills could be challenged in court as well. The Department of Administration, who's right now being led by Governor Gianforte's unconfirmed appointee, Misty Giles, provided those emails to the legislative branch without redacting confidential information like they normally would in response to a public records request.
So that means about 2,500 emails sent to or from the court administrator are now in the hands of legislative Republicans. And actually, there's ongoing litigation about whether more emails should be released. Quite a few of the emails that have been released have been provided to media outlets. Some of them are a little embarrassing for the judiciary. They show people in the judicial branch, like Chief Justice Mike McGrath, discussing lobbying efforts against bills that would affect the judiciary and that they don't like. At times, judges in those emails are a little snarky, which has upset lawmakers who are trying to pass the bills.
Republican lawmakers have now formed a select committee on transparency and accountability to investigate the judiciary's conduct. They've subpoenaed all seven justices on the Supreme Court asking for any internal communications about pending legislation moving through the state house. And they're looking for alleged bias over bills that could be challenged in court. And they've also ordered Court Administrator Beth McLaughlin to appear before the committee and turn over her state computer.
The Supreme Court did issue an order aiming to halt the subpoenas Friday, on the logic that it makes sense to stop and figure out how this whole thing should move forward. Republicans, though, have pushed back on similar orders previously, arguing in part that it isn't fair for the Supreme Court to be adjudicating a case involving its top administrator.
Okay, so Eric, Democrats are really pushing back against this investigation by Republicans. They're going so far as to call it a constitutional crisis. Talk me through their argument.
So as Democrats see it, Republicans have manufactured a crisis here in order to smear the judiciary and try to seize more power at the state's direction. That's essentially what their argument boils down to. And there are a lot of bills going through the legislature that can end up in court, and not just bills that immediately apply to the judiciary. We have a lot of anti-abortion bills this session, restrictions on trans youth participating in sports and getting some medical treatments, new law that would allow firearms on college campuses. So all these things that kind of get at very real current debates in our society with a Republican governor for the first time in a while. We have a lot of aggressive conservative legislation moving through the system, Republicans should say, with a mandate from voters. And the judiciary, so the third branch of government, could serve as a check on that.
I will note Senate Minority Leader Jill Koner brought this up during a press availability last week with reporters, and she kind of talked about what she thinks the motivation of the Republican Party is here.
Since the very beginning of the session, the governor and the Republicans have been doing everything in their power to delegitimize and take over the Montana's independent court system.
One other thing to note here is that hardline Republican politicians in Montana have seen the Supreme Court as a barrier to the course they want to set the state on for a long time. As I was writing a story about this week, my editor-in-chief, John Adams, reminded me that he'd published a story for the Great Falls Tribune based on some internal GOP emails back in 2013. And one of those emails talked about this in very explicit terms. Like they said, we need to have a long-term strategy to reshape the Montana Supreme Court so it won't block so many of our conservative bills. We've also heard concern this year about activist judges from lawmakers. For example, during a debate about a bill that would have made judicial elections explicitly partisan earlier this session, Representative Matt Regeer said on the House floor that he thinks judges clearly have political persuasions that can affect their decision-making.
I believe while we've got partisan judges, as you can tell, that we should let the voters know that too.
So one way to look at this whole thing is as part of a long-term effort by Republicans to convince the public that the judiciary is inherently partisan and needs to be reformed. So to be clear, Republicans do insist that their investigation that they have set up for this is just about using legislative power to hold the judiciary accountable for what they call questionable conduct in this specific situation.
Well, there are lots of details to track there, and I'm sure we'll be seeing some more fast-moving developments this week. But switching gears a bit, I want to talk about another bill that's been stirring up controversy, and that is Senate Bill 379. Kayla, you've been tracking this one. Can you talk us through what it would do?
Yeah, SB 379 is aimed at incentivizing a added purchase from Northwestern Energy in the Colstrip coal-fired power plant. It would let the utility recover money if it chooses to enter a lease, an equity interest, or power purchase agreement. And it could recover a lot of those costs from customers. The bill does grant the Public Service Commission oversight, but it also sets cost recovery terms. So that removes the Public Service Commission's rate-making abilities, which the PSC has issues with.
Can you kind of remind me, Kayla, the role of the PSC and what kind of power is going to be removed here?
The Public Service Commission's job is to balance the interests of people who pay their electric bills in the state with the interests of the utilities. So it feels that the bill is removing their ability to do that.
So who's supporting this proposed legislation and why?
Some of the proponents who have spoken at hearings for this bill include workers' unions, some people who also see it as a way to extend the life of the plant or increase the health of the plant.
Gotcha. And we've definitely seen legislation like this come up before at the legislature where lawmakers are trying to keep Colstrip alive. Can you kind of maybe talk me through why there's such a big effort to do that?
Republican Senator Steve Fitzpatrick from Great Falls is the sponsor of Senate Bill 379, and he kind of echoes Northwestern's argument that the state is short on what's called dispatchable power. That's on-demand power, which coal can provide. Most of the power plant owners are tied to states that have announced they'll phase out coal within the next 10 years. So Washington State has said 2025, Oregon has said 2030, and two of the plant's four units closed in early 2020. The Public Service Commission estimates that the plant's remaining life could span over 21 years. So you have five of the six owners of the plant tied to states that are pulling out of coal, and Northwestern sees Colstrip as a way to build their needed capacity. So last year, they tried to buy a share in the plant. That didn't go through. And in a recent press release, they say that they are interested in entering a power purchase agreement with a Colstrip owner.
So what kind of opposition are we seeing to this bill?
A perfect example of this is a group of people in Missoula protested the bill, and some of the things they were saying were they were concerned that they'd be settled with the cost of the Colstrip power plant. They were concerned that they'd be paying for it years after its closure. So there's a lot of concern that customers who need electricity in the state are going to be paying off the cost of the power plant for years to come. There's also some opposition from regulators and the Public Service Commission who oppose it. The Public Service Commission is made up of 5 Republican commissioners. Also on the Senate floor, Republican Senator Brad Molnar of Laurel voted against the bill, the only Republican to vote against the bill. He also said he was concerned that customers could be saddled with costs.
Do we know the long-term costs for Northwestern Energy's electric customers?
We don't know for certain, but the Public Service Commission estimated a couple of different financial scenarios. So if Northwestern were to buy Puget Sound's 25% share, over the 21 years that the Public Service Commission estimates the plant could be alive, the average customer could pay somewhere between $600 and about $1,200. And if Northwestern were to purchase all of the remaining shares in Unit 4, over 21 years, the average customer could pay somewhere between $1,700 and $3,500. Senate Bill 379 has cleared the Senate and is now waiting for its first vote in the House.
Okay, got it. And I understand that there are some other proposals that would affect Colstrip. Can you just talk us through, big picture, what those aim to do?
They're looking at different approaches to the plant. So there's one bill that would explore nuclear at the plant. There's another bill that would explore the possibility of carbon capture at the plant. So these are all bills that are meant to extend the life and or increase the health of the plant.
Kayla, I am glad you are tracking all of that. We'll be watching to see how that all plays out. Before we go, a proposal that would ban transgender women and girls from competing in interscholastic women's sports was amended in the Senate so that it would be void if the federal government threatens to pull federal education funding from the state. The House decided to reject that amendment, which is sending the bill to a conference committee that we expect to see discuss the amendment this week. The NCAA released a statement last week saying that it won't hold sporting events in states that move forward with bans on transgender women competing in women's sports. The state budget is in a holding pattern and is awaiting final reconciliation between the House and Senate. And Senate Bill 100, which we talked about last week, that would create a new eligibility verification process for social safety net programs, was voted down in committee last week. Eric, Kayla, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been The Session, a weekly preview of the action at the Montana State House during the 2021 legislative session. From Montana Free Press, Montana Public Radio, and Yellowstone Public Radio, thanks for listening.